Okay, hi everyone. Thank you for coming. Welcome. So I'd like to introduce Yeong-Soo Song from Seoul National University, who will talk to us today about homomorphic encryption for arithmetic of approximate numbers. Thank you, Yeong-Soo.
Thank you for Chris and Laura for the invitation and introduction. And thank you for joining here the presentation. This talk is about homomorphic encryption of arithmetic of approximate numbers. This presentation is basically based on the paper of the same title, but I try to explain the intuition as well as some nice applications or examples together. And this all was done by my advisor, Professor Jung Hee-chun, and two colleagues, Andre and Miran. So if you have any questions, then do not hesitate to interrupt me anytime during presentation. So I'll start with motivation and explain three main ideas for our construction and show you some evaluation of circuits and applications and conclude with implementation research. So in fact, I thought that the audience are familiar to homomorphic encryption, but I heard that some of you are not so familiar in homomorphic encryption. So I explain about briefly. Homomorphic encryption is a crypto system that allows operation between ciphertext. So if you have messages or vector of messages and carry out encryption, you will get a ciphertext. And assume that you have a circuit that which you want to evaluate. Then without cryptography, you may just compute this function. But homomorphic encryption allows us to compute this circuit while the messages are encrypted. So in this case, you will get an encryption of this evaluation value. So this diagram will commute if you use the correct homomorphic encryption scheme. So I think this is one of the most powerful applications for homomorphic encryption. So what I want to do is encrypt my data before send it to the public server and use the robust power or storage of public server to enable us to compute the result of evaluation while protecting the messages securely. There are mandatory possibilities of applications of homomorphic encryption. For example, you can send your secure biometric data to the hospital using homomorphic encryption, and the hospital can evaluate their secret function to know your status, but they get not your real result, but just a randomly looking string. If they return the result to you, then you can use your own secret key to recover the ciphertext and get your result. There are some other applications such as personal advertising or pricing and data mining. So homomorphic encryption is first suggested in 78. The concept is suggested in 78, but the first probable security homomorphic encryption scheme was suggested in 2009 by Gentry. And after that, the sequences of papers was published. There are many various hardness assumptions. For example, approximate AGCD problem or learning errors, its ring variant or N-true version. There are a lot of schemes, but except some of very few schemes, we can divide them into two categories. One is scale invariant style, and the other is non-scale invariant style. In fact, I don't really prefer this naming. So I call them as FV style and VGV style. Because the scaling variant is just one possible property of this kind of scheme, and we even can revise these schemes as a leveled version. In that case, the modulus is not scale invariant anymore. So if I, let me introduce our previous homomorphic encryption briefly. So basically, ciphertext is a vector of integers or polynomials. It depends on what kind of scheme you will use. And you have your own secret key. If you take inner product of ciphertext and secret key, then you will get a message, but not the exact one. M hat, I call this value hat of M as a decryption structure. In the first category, M hat is a form of M plus PE for some small noise E. So this noise E is inserted to the ciphertext for guaranteeing the security. And here, scale invariant style message is in the higher part of modulus, and error is here. So after computing this decryption structure, you can take modulus P again to finally get your real message. In this case, you may multiply P over Q and round it to get a real message. So in this case, the messages are belong to some modular space, such as integer modulo P, or some integral polynomials modulo P, or finite field with characteristic P. So we have several libraries, including the HELIF from IBM and C library of Microsoft Research. And theoretically, we can evaluate every Boolean circuit in a polynomial time. So theoretically, it's done. So we can evaluate everything in securely. But still, we cannot use homomorphic encryption in practice for these kinds of applications. Let's see the why. So the previous plaintext space are discrete, a kind of discrete plaintext space, modulo P or finite field. But in real world, many kinds of data set are contained in a kind of continuous space, such as real number, complex numbers, or vector of real number, sometimes polynomial over real numbers. And for computation of these values, these real values, we should describe, quantize them into a discrete set to store and compute in computer systems. So, and these kinds of operations are not the operations over modular space. It's operations over real number or complex numbers. You can see several examples like image processing. You should compute Fourier transform for efficient image processing or some trigonometric functions and statistical data and biometric data. Your like blood pressure is not contained in modular space. Blood pressure modulo 3 is meaningless, right? So that's why the current homomorphic encryption schemes are not appropriate these kinds of operations. So if we see the real floating point operation, forget about cryptography, then value is expressed by a significant with a fixed bit of size and times base to the exponent. In computer system, you can simply store the sign and the several bits and exponent for approximated value. And the important point is that after each of operation, we do not store this whole value. Instead, we carry out rounding operation to send this value to a kind of approximate value. Because if you have 3-digit precision here and 3-digit precision here, then this last 3 digits are not exact, in fact. They are already destroyed by some noise after these digits. That's why we remove these three digits and store only the most several significant bits. But the problem is the extraction of this MSB bit, most significant bits, is very expensive in homomorphic encryption. Because homomorphic encryption basically supports the polynomial circuit. And if you want to evaluate some other functions like comparison or equality test, you should express this kind of circuit as a polynomial or Boolean circuit to be evaluated by homomorphic encryption. But it is really difficult to express this rounding function as a polynomial. So that was the problem. There are two methods. One method is to really evaluate this rounding function. As I explained, this circuit is very expensive and require huge parameter in homomorphic encryption. The other way is just skip the rounding, just store the 7-digit in this case. In that case, the problem is the bit size of message grows exponentially on depth. If you multiply 1,000 values, then you will get 4,000-digit integers. It is too big to be evaluated in homomorphic encryption. Okay, so let's see some more detail about previous homomorphic encryption. In the first category, BGV style multiplication is done by multiplication of decryption structure, not exact multiplication between messages. So this is a decryption structure of first ciphertext. The inner product of ciphertext and secret key gives us this value, modulo q. This is M1 plus P1 times E1. So error is in the upper bit of the message. If you multiply these two decryption structure, you will get this value. So that's why we can recover the modulo p value of M1 times M2. But most significant bits of M1 times M2 is here, which is destroyed by homomorphic encryption noise. The other, I don't like this word, but I used it, sorry. the other way is to use this encoding. It seems okay if we can directly multiply the decryption structure without this I. At first, I explained the second decryption structure is like C times SK modulo Q equals something like this. So if we can directly multiply this decryption structure, then the most significant of M1, M2 will not be destroyed. However, the homomorphic encryption has some noise, so we cannot directly multiply these values. Instead, we compute C times SK, not modulo Q, over just integer or integral polynomials. So we have some other type of noise here. So after multiplication, again, the most significant bits of M1 times M2 is destroyed by this type of error. This kind of property makes us difficult to compute rounding operation or approximate computation in homomorphic encryption. So let's see our main idea. The first idea is just ignore the noise. It means if you want to compute something approximately, for example, blood pressure, some error is allowed to the data, right? So every data is rounded to some approximate value. So if you add some more noise to message, it's still okay. This value is still a nice approximation value of real value. I don't know, but we can preserve enough precision for computation. So this noise is initially inserted for the security of skin, but after encryption, we consider this error as a part of a computation error occurring during approximate arithmetic. So, of course, the problem is we cannot remove the noise anymore from the decryption circuit. In previous schemes, noise are located in the separated place. So after decryption, you can recover exact value, M1 or M2, in this case also. But if we just add noise directly to the message, you will get only an approximate value of a message. But it's OK. It's still a good approximation of real value. Anyone do not know the real value of blood pressure. So let's see this example. Assume that M has this value with a three-digit precision. It means that we are already allowing some error less than 50, for example. So even though you add some more noise because of encryption, this value is still a good approximated value for the real message. So now I can forget about the error. If you just multiply secret key to the ciphertext, you will directly get a good enough value. So homomorphic encryption, homomorphic operation like addition or multiplication is done by the same technique with previous homomorphic encryption. So if you add two values, you will get an approximate value of their summation. You will multiply these two decryption structure, then you will get the approximation value of their multiplication. So this black part means the noise, inaccurate part, and this blue part means the precise bit. So here I define the relative error. Relative error, the notion of relative error is also used in just the unencrypted floating point operation, for example. It means it represents how much you can trust the decrypted value or approximated value. So on ciphertext has a relative error beta. Beta will be a value between positive value less than 1. So if error is relatively smaller compared to the message, then relative error will be really small. So if you have 10 bits of precision, the beta will be about 1 over 1,000. If you add two values with relative error beta 1 and beta 2, then you get the approximate value with a relative error bounded by their maximum. In the case of multiplication, because of key switching techniques, I skip these details, but some key switching techniques for homomorphic multiplication, you have some additional error. This is the only difference between encrypted multiplication and homomorphic multiplication. In real world, without cryptography, you can just multiply them and get an approximate value of M1 times M2 with relative error. It's bounded by the summation of input relative errors. There is one more term here, but if you set the parameter appropriately, then this error is very ignorable, very small, compared to the Bayesian noise already contained in the message. So relative error becomes almost same as in the unencrypted computation, beta 1 times beta 2. So certainly, you will lose 1 bit of precision after each of multiplication. But it's not because of cryptography. It's just a natural property of approximate operation. So I can say this is almost optimal in the sense of precision. With this method, the size of modulus is already much smaller than previous method because now we don't need to consider the noise size of noise, but still the bit size of modulus increases exponentially on depth because after multiplying 4-digit messages, you get 8-digit messages. It's still a problem. So we removed the L times term here, but it's still too big to be evaluated. Okay, so the second idea is a solution for this problem. So there is some process called the rescale in our scheme. Technically, it's just multiplication with division by p and rounding to the nearest integer or nearest polynomial. But inside of ciphertext, messages transformed from this m into m over p. And the ciphertext modulus is divided by p together. The purpose of this procedure is to reduce the bit size of message. It has a similar effect as in the rounding operation of floating point. So in floating point, after multiplication, 7-digit integers become 4-digit integer. You can just divide by 1,000 and round it to the closest integer. So after this rescaling procedure, the resulting ciphertext has a message m over p inside of it, where the noise is almost equal to e over p. Here, of course, we have some more noise that comes from the property of homomorphic encryption, but this value is again almost much smaller than this value. We can control the size of this noise. So the relative error of ciphertext is almost preserved. So after multiplication, if you have 9 bits of precise bits and 11 bits of noise, you can just remove 10 bits least significant of bits to reduce the size of significant. So if we combine the first and second idea, you will get a multiplication procedure almost same as unencrypted floating point operation. Okay, let's repeat this procedure for see the how large ciphertext modulus is required for depth d. So if you start from m and squaring to m square, assume that the size of m is about p. So you get you start from 10 bits, it becomes 20 bits. After rounding, m square over p becomes again 10 bits, and 20 bits, and 10 bits, and so on. So for evaluation of depth L circuit, the size of required ciphertext modulus grows linearly on the depth instead of exponential growth of previous schemes. So now our performance becomes very efficient. Do you have any questions until this idea? It's okay? Because this idea is a kind of independent idea for ring LW construction. There are many Huddings assumptions for construction of homomorphic encryption, but the most practical ones are based on ring LW problem. In ring LW problem, we use this cyclotomic ring, polynomial ring for the construction of homomorphic encryption, where the n is dimension and this polynomial is cyclotomic polynomial of degree n. So in this case, in previous scheme, the naive plain text space was R sub P. It means G mod P over quotient cyclotomic polynomial. Previously, they used this vectorization to make a polynomial, to make correspondence between this polynomial and this vector. If you can make a one-to-one corresponding between a polynomial and a vector, then you can carry out a kind of SIMD operation on a single ciphertext. It means you can encrypt not the value, but the vector of messages in a single ciphertext. And if you add two ciphertexts or if you multiply two ciphertexts, then inside of vector, the messages are added or multiplied component-wisely. It looks like SIMD operation in computer process. So this batching technique is really important for the practical use of homomorphic encryption. But this technique cannot be applied to our scheme because here the important property was this factoring over the modular space. But we don't have plain text modulus, so this polynomial is irreducible over characteristic zero space. That's the problem. So we adapt the canonical embedding map for solving this problem. So canonical embedding map is defined by map from this quotient space to a vector of complex numbers defined by evaluation of primitive absolute of unity. So here the zeta is one of the primitive absolute of unity, and you can evaluate all of this primitive absolute of unity at this polynomial to get a vector of evaluations. So this map is kind of a ring homomorphism, of course. And moreover, in homomorphic encryption, we use this canonical embedding norm to measure the size of a polynomial, which is defined by the infinite norm of this evaluation vector. If we understand this matrix space with this canonical embedding norm, then this map becomes isometric ring homomorphism. So that preserves the size of error inside of a message. So the way of encoding is that in previous scheme, this polynomial was factorized into L different irreducible polynomials, and each of them has, each of polynomial has degree D, and they have, each of them has D different roots in this finite field of order P to DD. So in HL library, for example, they pick one root from the each of conjugation group. So there are L different roots of a cyclotomic polynomial, but none of two share the same irreducible polynomial. If we follow their methodology, then the cyclotomic polynomial is factorized in over real number as a product of quadratic polynomials, of course. So we can think about this subring h of c to the n such that zeta of index minus j is conjugation of z sub j. So if we choose some half of this index j in some way, then this set S forms a subgroup of G unique group such that their quotient group has exactly two elements. So the main idea of our batching technique is to send this polynomial first to the image of canonical embedding, but this vector is contained not just contained in n-dimensional space, but contained in a smaller subgroup. So we can make a one-to-one correspondence between sigma of m and this vector, where the evaluation is done at zeta to dj. So shortly, we can choose half of element indexes to evaluate this vector. So intuitionally, you can think that our plain text space is just vector of complex numbers of dimension half of n. But in the implementation of homomorphic encryption, we cannot directly use this space because assume that you have a vector of complex numbers, then you should go this way using these inverse functions to get a polynomial. But this polynomial need not to be a don't need to have an integral coefficient. If you choose arbitrarily vector here, then the resulting polynomials become just a real polynomial. So we need a kind of a rounding operation for real use of this batching method. So let's start from this discrete space Gaussian integers. You can change this space to any quantized set or discrete set you want to use. I just chose Gaussian integer for simplicity. So we are given a vector of Gaussian integers. Then you will send it with respect to these maps. Then you will get a real polynomial Zx. But it's not enough for homomorphic encryption. So you need to round it to an integral polynomial. Before that, it's the optional process, but you can first multiply some scaling factor to maintain the precision of your plain text. And this rounding is not just simply the rounding of coefficients, but some more complicated rounding for minimizing the rounding error with respect to the canonical embedding map. But in the case of power of 2 degree, many of the schemes are using power of 2 degree cyclotomic rings. This rounding operation is simply coefficient-wise rounding to the integral polynomial. So it's very simple. Conversely, decoding procedure starts from this polynomial after this evaluation set zeta to djs. Conversely, you can multiply the inverse of this scaling factor and rounding it to the Gaussian integer. So encoding and decoding almost preserves the size of error inside of plain text, and the additional error occurred by this rounding is relatively small. I'll show you an example. So in the case of 4-degree cyclotomic polynomial, and I use the 64, 2 to the 6 for scaling factor. Then this canonical embedding map is simply represented by matrix multiplication. This CRT matrix is a van der Monde matrix generated by the eighth root of unities. And its inverse is simply described by transpose conjugation. If you start from this vector, then first you carry out this function to make conjugation to negative index and use the inverse of canonical embedding to get this real polynomial. But since you cannot directly use this polynomial, we will multiply this scaling factor to this polynomial and round it to the closest integral polynomial. So the resulting of encoding is this cubic polynomial. So if you want to double check the correctness, evaluation of zeta and zeta cubic is almost equal to 64 times 3 plus 4i and 64 times 2 minus I. You can see the rounding error is very, very small compared to the message. And encryption is done by adding this message to a ring LW sample by some randomizing process. And the decryption structure will give you a kinds of approximate value. Approximate value for scaled polynomial. So you have an encryption error here and rounding error here that comes from the rounding of this polynomial, because this polynomial is not integral polynomial. But since this error is very, very small compared to encryption error, we can almost ignore this term. Instead, only the log 2 of this encryption error ruin some least significant of message. So if encryption error has 5 bits, for example, since you already multiplied the 64 here, you can exactly recover your plain text. But the choice of a scaling factor is just up to the user. So,
can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
So the error sampling you're doing here, like in the canonically embedded space, and then you're using this matrix to push it over?
Yes. In fact, this encryption, in real public key encryption, user do not need to use this process, but public key has already generated by such a process. So the user can just simply adding some encryption of zeros or multiplying a small polynomial to encryption zero to get a encryption. Yeah, but of course this encryption error should be chosen following this method similarly.
But you're saying in practice you avoid doing that by using other tricks like adding encryption or something?
Yeah, of course the real ring LW problem is different from some polynomial ring LW problem, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to ask. So you're doing the sampling on the polynomial side?
Yeah, but in our implementation we just simply use power 2 degree now, so...
Yeah. So you could do it on the polynomial side.
Yeah. But of course our scheme works on some non-power 2 degree ring LW construction. So if you want to use another implement, not ours, but to use the non-power 2 degree encryption, then of course the error should be chosen by this way for guaranteeing the security of ring LW problem.
And you can always make this 64 large enough so that the error is in the small.
64 is just an example. So encryption noise depends on the choice of parameter, including dimension or size of modulus. So,
yeah. I mean that. If you want 64.
Yeah.
I mean, like you can scale this up, right, if needed.
Yeah.
So I have a question on this encoding. So here you have 3, and then it's encoded as 3.008. So the absolute error is about like less than 1%.
Yeah.
But so is this like worst case, or can it be worse, or can you?
So
absolute.
In the worst case, the rounding error is bounded by each rounding error in the coefficient is bounded by half. So. If the infinite norm of a polynomial is bounded by half, its canonical embedding norm is bounded by half of n.
Okay.
So half of n is the upper bound for rounding error.
I see.
Yeah. So, but the encryption error is normally much bigger than n. So,
yeah
you can almost ignore that.
I see. So since this depends on n, there's a bound that depends on n.
So bigger n is better, that's what you're saying?
N is chosen by security or the size of a plain text or modulus, third depth you want to evaluate. Yeah.
So one question, so you said that this delta can be, I mean, how asked about this delta? So so this delta can be made also bigger, of course, depending on what your parameters are. But so like, how does the public you need to make this delta in practice?
In practice, So assume that you have exact value here. So you do not want to lose any precision from here. Then the scaling factor is should be big enough to ignore this encryption error. So if scaling error is big enough, then you will get exact decryption result from encoding, encryption, decryption, and decoding, because error is removed by rounding operation. But in that case, the scaling value is not decided by rounding error, but decided by encryption error. Mm-hmm. And encryption error, it again depends on the homomorphic encryption scheme. So for example, in the case of hlib or some other libraries using multiplication with small polynomial for randomization of a ring LW sample, encryption error before modulo switching is roughly n square or something like this. I'm not sure, but in that case, this scaling value should be bigger than that encryption error to ignore this value.
And you can also tune it if you don't care about absolute accuracy, then you can tune it. There's a lot of freedom in how you choose these parameters.
Yeah, so it is difficult to user to understand how to choose the parameter. Yeah, so if you have 10 bits of messages and assume the encryption error is 10 bits, then the delta should be at least 1,000, and the decryption structure becomes 20 bits. Here you have a precise message and here the encryption error. So, and during computation, of course, we have some more errors like key switching error or modulo switching error. So these kinds of errors should be controlled much smaller than the computation error occurring by approximate computation. So in real world, we have a very precise value, and here at most one digit or very few digits for inaccurate digit. But inside of ciphertext, we maintain at least 10 bits or more than that. It depends on the parameter to maintain this precision. So this is this message bit is decided by user, how much you want the precision of message. And this is exactly overhead between unencrypted computation and encrypted computation. You should maintain a bit longer string for homomorphic encryption. Okay, so this is another contribution. So if you use the ring LW scheme, then the ciphertext is of the form like this. So ciphertext is a vector of polynomial of the dimension 2, b times a, and b is generated by a times secret polynomial s, and adding your message. Of course, this message already contains some error. In the case of hlib or shield, they support the slot exchange between, So we almost can do the same thing using the key switching technique. So the slot exchange is the main reason that we chose the set as not just a subset of a unit group, but as a subgroup of unit group. So if you evaluate x to the I to this polynomial, this ciphertext is an encryption of m of x to the I with respect to the discrete key. And inside of this ciphertext, previously in the JS, m sub j was stored in JSON, but now we have M sub ij in the J slot. It means a permutation between ciphertext slots. And another way to access the ciphertext is to take an inverse of the monomial. Because we evaluate the mth root of unity zeta at message, if you evaluate its conjugation, then you will get the slowdized conjugation operation in the message. So we can compare the slowdized conjugation of message vector or rotation of message vector using some key switching techniques. Okay. Now I'll start to explain some evaluations and applications. So let's start from the simplest case, polynomial. So if you want to evaluate a polynomial of degree d, then you need a homomorphic encryption scheme of depth log d. Because for evaluation of x to the d, you can imagine the multiplication tree. The height of tree will be log d. So the required depth is log d, and output the precision loss is bounded by abound log d. So compared to the unencrypted computation, the overhead in precision loss is bounded by 1 bit. And the computation cost is bounded by linear only. So you can evaluate a polynomial very efficiently using our scheme and apply this method to some analytic functions that cannot be expressed as a polynomial. In the case of exponential function, you can approximate this value as a power series, and evaluation of this power series will give you a precise enough value. And this log d bits of precision loss is just a very general bound. If you target a specific polynomial and analyze its noise, then sometimes precision loss is very decreased. If you see the second lemma, for the evaluation of eta precision of message to exponential function requires depth log eta and eta multiplication and precision lost less than 1 bit. So the reason is that in the final term of this expansion, of course, you will lost log d precision in x to the d ciphertext, but the value x to the d divided by d factorial is very small compared to this whole value. So that's why the resulting ciphertext has very, very good precision here. And I'll show you later, but we can evaluate some other analytic functions, including trigonometric functions and logistic functions. And especially this logistic function is very widely used in applications, including machine learning. And there is another special example of evaluation. Here, the complexity was bounded by the degree of polynomial, because we should evaluate the monomials, x, x squared, x cubed, and so on. So at least we need to multiply d times for evaluation of polynomial of degree d. But in this case, inverse approximate polynomial of multiplicative inverse with power to degree has a very special form. Here is an example. So if you have a small value x and y is 1 subtract x, then inverse of x is very efficiently approximate by this form. And the error is bounded by this value. So to achieving the 2 to the L bits of precision, you need only the depth L and depth L times of multiplication. So here we, again, the precision loss is bounded by 1 bit, and complexity and depth are bounded by the log of a bit of precision. So if you want to compute 16-bit precision of multiplicative inverse, then you need 4-depth homomorphic encryption. But it seems almost optimal in the sense that in the unencrypted case, if you want to compute the multiplicative inverse, normally you use Newton's method. And if you repeat 4 times, then it will give you a 16-bit of precision of multiplicative inverse. So same in the case of our scheme. All right, so there are some other examples. But I'm sorry, but I think I'm using a wrong presentation file. Something is not.
Wrong? Start again?
This was the correct talk, right?
Because.
Yeah.
Oh, I made some actions, but I couldn't use this. Okay, here we have some more contents. So I explained that we will evaluate M's Rudolph unity at X2 for batching technique. So if we want to multiply M's root of unity to message, then you just need to multiply X to the ciphertext for multiplication with X. So using this property in this paper, they evaluated this FFT algorithm very efficiently. But they didn't support the batching technique. But in our case, we use batching technique together because if you have this message and it corresponds to M sub J, this is M of zeta to the J for some index set. And if you multiply the monomial to this message, then it will correspond to zeta to the j times mj for each j. So the problem is the different constants are multiplied to this value in different slots. But in the case of this whole pipeline, means FFT and Hadamard multiplication, or Hadamard multiplication means slotized multiplication. And inverse Fourier transformation does not depend on the choice of this index J. So if you evaluate this whole pipeline, then every slot will give you the correct answer independently from the choice of M's root of unity. So this method still works on our scheme. This kind of computation is required when you want to compute the multiplication of two integral polynomials very quickly. You evaluate some value at polynomial, and then take a multiplication between evaluation points, and take inverse Fourier transformation to recover the real polynomial. So our computation supports the approximate arithmetic, but sometimes using this our method, you can recover the exact multiplication of result of integral polynomial, because we already know that multiplication of integral polynomial is also an integral polynomial, of course. So if you carry out this whole pipeline and recover a polynomial, then you will get a real polynomial. But this polynomial must be very close to an integral polynomial if you maintain some bits of precision carefully. Then you know that this small error comes from this homomorphic evaluation, not from the integral polynomial. So you can recover the exact multiplication result of integral polynomials using our scheme. Another good idea application is comes from some recursive algorithm for convergence, including Newton's method or gradient descent algorithm or principal component analysis for matrix factorization. Because this kind of algorithm uses the convergence property. It means that assume that here is real minimum, local minimum value, and assume that you start from this point to find this minimum value of this function. So assume that at this point, the value of f is minimized. In gradient descent method, you compute the gradient here to move to next point and repeat it. Finally, it converges to the real minimum. But in each iteration of step, our scheme gives you some additional error. So sometimes it goes the wrong way for some error, but it's okay. You will compute the gradient here, not from here. So this error is recovered by gradient again. So it means that this algorithm has itself a negative feedback of error that occurred in the previous step. So it will give you a more different way to close to the real minimum. So that's why we can use this kind of method in real world using not exact value, but some kind of approximate value. We run the algorithms on like double variable on C++ language. They also give you a kind of approximation value, but we can still find the real optimal or minimum value using this kind of method. And I used this method to also to control of cyber physical system, including drones. So in each iteration, some value detected from the sensor of drone, including direction or height, velocity, is also contained in real number. So I can give a drone a next direction, but the error, thanks to this kind of negative effect, the size of error does not increase, but finally drone can fly to the promised place. So. Okay, there are some implementation results here. So for evaluation of depth four circuit, with 15 bits of precision input, our scheme takes less than 0.5 seconds for real time, and we have 2 to the 12 slots, so the amortized time is really small. And if you want to compute a multiplicative inverse with 9 bits of input, it will take less than 0.7 seconds. And logistic function is just one example of polynomial approximation, then it will take less than 1 second or 2.5 seconds for evaluation of degree 7 and 9. And you can see that the required size of ciphertext modulus is really small. Here, the precision of input is about 32 bits, same as double variable. And the amortized time is also really small. This is an evaluation result of a whole pipeline of FFT and Hadamardi operation in inverse Fourier transform. We have some are different environment for implementation, but both CSV paper and we used the multi-threading here. We didn't use multi-threading here, but for more fair comparison, we adapt multi-threading here. So it give you us a similar real-time implementation, but we have much more small amortized time. Thank you for your attention. Do you have any
questions?
So is there any chance you can bootstrap the scheme?
In fact, the next slide is about bootstrapping because bootstrapping is not written in the current paper, but we are thinking about the concept of bootstrapping. So previously, the bootstrapping, the purpose of bootstrap is to refresh ciphertext. Refresh means transform the ciphertext into some different form of ciphertext for continuing computation. So previously, it focused on the management of noise size. But in our case, you cannot separate the noise from the message in decrypt structure. So it is impossible to get rid of this part, even with the secret key. So in our case, the purpose of bootstrapping is totally different. The purpose of our bootstrapping is that you have this ciphertext, size of modulus becomes really small compared to the message size. So you cannot multiply message ciphertext anymore. So we can increase the size of modulus like this while maintaining the message, almost maintaining. So of course we'll have some more error because of some operation. Yeah.
Two questions. One, there's been quite a lot of work on doing numerical computations in the setting of interactive secure computation. I don't know if you've looked at these works, but my question is whether, I mean, I'm not that familiar with all of them, but we call buzzwords like secure computation for floating point computations and such. The question is whether there's any relevance of these techniques to the setting of FHG or the other way around. Are your techniques relevant to the setting of interactive secure computations? I mean, just looking at some buzzwords of papers, there's been a lot of work in this domain.
In fact, our idea is not for a specific scheme, but a kind of general toolkit for many schemes. So at first, this idea can be applied to many homomorphic encryption schemes, including non-LW-based, ring LW-based, or...
For homomorphic encryption, you're in a regime where you do the computations non-interactive, non-encrypted data, and in secure two-party computation, you can do some communication to evaluate arithmetic circuits, right? So there is a lot of work, actually also a lot of implementation work, that tries to take numerical problems and use tricks from numerical analysis to use approximations that are friendly towards the techniques of classical secure two-party computation. Right?
You mean that in multi-party computations, you have a lot of previous work on dealing with approximate computation of approximate numbers?
Yeah, I'm saying that there is a lot of work on secure computation, multi-party computation. It's a different regime, but I expect that either techniques from there will help you, or the other way around, or both. It's a different setting.
I think that's a good point. We didn't find any there, but
just look at secure computation floating point. You will find at least one paper that has a combination of these two things. So.
In fact, of course, normally multi-party computation gives us a much better performance in real practice.
On the other hand, in FHE, there's a nice idea of taking advantage of the noise to do the rounding. I'm not sure what's the analog for standard secure computation. So I think differences that might be interesting to explore.
It would be pretty interesting to see the their techniques.
But if we allow the protocol between some different party, then if you have a kind of, maybe we can think about garbage circuit. So if you have a, if you have this value and make rounding this part securely, then maybe you can add some random value, but filling zero here and any random value here, and you will get some value and send this value to the some different party to carry out the rounding of this part. And yeah, maybe, but I'm not so proficient at multiparty computation, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, so my other question is whether in this setting is you care about the information, like whether the output, there's any concern about the output revealing information about the input, or the output is like, are you concerned about the output not learning, not revealing more information? So then you need to worry that the rounding might actually, you need to analyze what type of information you're computing, the approximate version of the function. So I might be okay with computing the original function as far as what the output leaks about my input. But the approximate version, because there is no precise guarantee about what the approximate version, how it's related to the exact version, there might be at least a hypothetical concern that the approximate version might leak information that the exact version does not leak. So again, there have been some work studying these type of problems, but if you want to argue about the security of these approximations, you need to at least address these issues.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, let's thank Young-Soo again.